Thank you very much for the invitation. And please, anybody in the room, I see several very well-known faces in this world. So if anybody has any comments at the end, please jump in. So, you know, we like these symposiums to be new and exciting and different things that get brought up. I could have taken this exact same talk 20 years ago because so little has changed in our world except for a little bit of the testing, the reverse testing versus the traditional testing and all that. But since my previous speaker just gave a wonderful talk on it, I had to avoid that. So really, the rest of what I was charged to talk about is congenital syphilis, kind of where we are now. And unfortunately and fortunately, in one aspect, we haven't really moved very far in the last several decades. The one good thing is we still the syphilis is still exquisitely sensitive to penicillin, which is a good thing. All right, so this is what we've been looking at since 1941. So back, you know, mid-40s, we had penicillin. It was the treatment. I mean, it was amazing. All of a sudden, syphilis rates bottomed out. Had a little bit of an issue back in 86 to 94 or so, and actually a lot of the congenital syphilis data that's come out of, you know, our institute where I was and around nationally, there's a lot of the data comes from that time period because we had a huge resurgence for a while there. And unfortunately, as you start seeing over towards 2014, we're starting to see a little bit on the rise. Now, these are cases, and everybody's been focusing on, you know, the MSM population, HIV-positive population, but we also have to remember the heterosexual population. There's a core group of, little group of us that take care of these patients. So these are the reported cases among women aged 15 to 44 years of age. And you'll notice almost across the board in the last year or two, we're starting to see rises in the heterosexual population also in our women. And even though, again, men far outweigh, you know, women when you start looking at numbers, you still see that reproductive age time period is where we're seeing the most cases of syphilis, and that's the where we're getting the increase in congenital syphilis rates. So before I can show you the slide of the congenital syphilis rates, you really have to talk about how do we define congenital syphilis. It sounds like it would be easy, a kid that's infected, but it's actually not. I know I hear a laughing in the room because it's really not. So yes, infants born with syphilis, absolutely, they meet criteria for congenital syphilis. Stillborns born to mothers with syphilis. So if a mom has syphilis and she has a stillbirth, that gets counted as a congenital syphilis. And then this is that nebulous category that kind of everybody puts stars by when you start talking about congenital syphilis rates, because infants born to mothers with untreated or inadequately treated syphilis, if they got treated 3 weeks ago and they got appropriately treated and they're fine, but unfortunately, they're still going to be documented as a congenital syphilis because they haven't quite reached the time period where you could say the infant has been appropriately treated. So this is unfortunately what congenital syphilis rates have done from 2005 to 2014. And the red line is the primary and secondary rates that follow along. So we started seeing an increase in primary and secondary in the adults, and certainly we start seeing an increase in congenital. They just go hand in hand, unfortunately. And I was actually at UT Southwestern in Parkland for 18 years, went there actually to do syphilis work, and was just recruited up to Johns Hopkins. And I kind of was kicking and screaming initially, going, I don't want to give up my syphilis and my HIV, and then look at maps like this and go, Maryland. Maryland is right up there also. I feel right at home at Johns Hopkins with syphilis. And we actually just had a big ocular syphilis symposium a few months ago at Hopkins, so I've learned a fair amount about ocular syphilis. So you'll see again, though, these are congenital rates, and it is still a significant issue in a number of the states out there. So why is this? From 2013 to 2014, there was a 28% rise in congenital syphilis cases. Now, during that time period, there was a 23% increase in primary and secondary rates during that time frame. So again, they seem to match. When they started going down, this is out of the 2014 STD surveillance information, when they started delving down into why these babies were infected, 22% of the patients had no prenatal care. So they didn't have the opportunity to be screened and thus treated. Unfortunately, the 78% that did have prenatal care, 43% did not get treatment. They either were not tested, 16% were not tested. We still have places in the country that do not test their pregnant women, or they say they're low risk. They're not, you know, these are not my patients. They would not ever get syphilis, and they don't test. Or they test in the initial one, but they're in states that don't require third trimester testing or testing at delivery. And so then they get these congenital syphilis babies, they go back, test the mom, and realize their first prenatal test was negative, but at some point during the pregnancy, they seroconverted. I am a passionate believer in early prenatal, third trimester, and delivery testing for every state out there. And I think we seriously need to move that. I mean, each state is moving towards it, but not every state has it yet. And this is one of the reasons why we're still seeing congenital syphilis out there. And then unfortunately, 17% were treated less than 30 days prior to delivery. So even though the moms probably were adequately treated and the kid may be completely normal appearing, normal testing, they still would have met criteria. So what is congenital syphilis? It's just when the bacteria crosses the placenta from an infected mother to the baby. It can occur at any stage, and it can occur at any gestational age. Now, there's variations, but it can occur at any stage and any gestational age. The manifestations, as everybody in the room knows, may not be present at birth. There may end up being late manifestations, which are often more immunologic and destructive. And the diagnosis, as was kind of touched upon, is surprisingly difficult. You know, all infants born to moms that have reactive serology should have an RPR or VDRL performed on the serum, not the umbilical cord, because the umbilical cord, you're never quite sure if it's mom or baby and all that, so the recommendations from the CDC are to make sure it's done on the serum. At this time, there's not a good, adequate IgM test available, though I am thrilled. I'm like sitting there on the edge of my seat on that one slide to find out that there may be something that truly works. I've known Pablo Sanchez for 20 years, and this has been like his life's frustration is not having a great IgM available. So that would be fantastic if we could get it. Physical exam. There are a number of findings that you may see on physical exam, and I'll show you some pictures in a minute. The problem is some of these babies have no physical findings initially. So you've got to remember to not just do the physical exam, look at the placenta, look at the umbilical cord. And for those people in the room that still remember how to do dark fields, because none of my residents now know how to do it, I think I have the only dark field filter from Parkland that I just realized I stole and took to Hopkins. I probably need to send it back to him. But dark field microscopy, if you know how to do it, if you have fluid that you can actually test. So these are some of the things you're looking for. That massive tissue in the upper left is a placenta. It is supposed to be smaller, very red. This is a pale edematous placenta. This is, you look at that and I think syphilis before anything else. That is a beautiful syphilis placenta. This is a baby on the right-hand side that has a congenital syphilis and actually had massive ascites. The abdomen was huge. The liver was very large. Large hepatosplenomegaly in this kid, ascites. The one in the lower bottom left, you know, you see the congenital lesions there, or the skin lesions you may see. But again, quite often you don't see any of that. That's even an umbilical, on the right-hand side, it's not an alien. It's actually a cross-section of an umbilical cord, very edematous. And if you look at it even more carefully, there's going to be villitis looking at it under the microscope. I put this slide in here to remind everybody that for every stillbirth that we have after 20 weeks, we always do a fetogram, and we're still looking for, I don't know, I don't think I have a pointer, but we're still looking for, oh, will it show up? Oh, beautiful. So you're still looking for long bone changes. So what we're looking for are things like this moth-eaten appearance at the end of the long bones. You'll see it over here, too. That should be a nice and smooth, you know, end of the femur. So the long bones may have that moth-eaten appearance. And we still do autopsies. Babies have really big livers, just normal. They have big livers. But that is an exceptionally large liver. This is one of our congenital stillbirth babies near term. So you've got to, if you can talk to the mother, you've got to perform an autopsy also. Well, this is probably the most important message I can give as an obstetrician standing up here, because I'm not a pediatrician, I'm an obstetrician. The only way to truly prevent congenital syphilis is to prevent or at least find and treat maternal syphilis. And these are textbook lesions from maternal syphilis. One of the problems is this happens all the time. George Wendell, who was my mentor at UT Southwestern, has always said this. you know, when syphilis rates are high, everybody recognizes it. But as syphilis rates start bottoming out, nobody recognizes it anymore. My residents don't notice it, or my medical students don't notice rashes and palm and sole lesions. And so I'm constantly showing pictures and things to remind people of what to look for. Because as rates start rising, I need to make sure clinically they can identify it. Because it's horribly embarrassing if you have a mother with a whole body syphilis rash and you send her to Durham for evaluation and they get tested. That's very embarrassing. So how do we make sure we find all our pregnant women? We screen everybody. Screen all pregnant women at their first prenatal visit. The recommendations are to, in high prevalence communities, screen again at 28 weeks and again at delivery. Though I already put my plug in for, I think everybody should be. No infant should ever be discharged from the hospital without confirmation of a negative maternal serology. So if a mom is born with no prenatal care, you make sure that RPR or VDRL is performed before she walks out of the hospital. And then screen anyone who delivers a stillborn infant after 20 weeks gestation. And I wanted to put a few slides in here. This is from Fiomara, and if you guys know old syphilis literature and all that, one of the big people that used to publish a lot on syphilis rates. And he did this beautiful paper in the New England Journal back in 1952 looking at stage of syphilis. The light blue is primary and secondary. Dark blue is early latent. Greenish is late latent. Uninfected is that bright greenish. And what he found was you saw, regardless of stage, you saw preterm delivery, perinatal death, and congenital syphilis in, again, smaller percentages, but you definitely saw it. So we actually did this at Parkland. We looked at the 88 to 98 data because that was right in that beautiful time period. Not beautiful, but you know the time period where we got lots and lots of cases. And we had, this is what we found. If a mom walked in the door at for delivery, so this was at delivery, if she had primary syphilis, that baby had a 23% chance of having either stillbirth or congenital syphilis by definition. Secondary was up to 60%, and you'll notice that still how high that stillbirth rate was. Early latent, 36%. Late latent, which everybody used to say, you know, not syphilologists never said it, but a lot of the non-ID related people will say this. Oh, late latent, they don't have active disease, they're not going to infect an infant. 7% of our infants, or 7% of the infants born to moms with late latent disease at delivery had evidence of congenital syphilis. And then the infamous unknown category, which, you know, is always the big category. So regardless of stage, there is transmission. So what is the appropriate treatment? And then I promise I'm finishing up soon, so we'll have time for questions. What is the appropriate treatment? Penicillin still remains the treatment of choice for pregnant women. I mean, still. Decades later. If you try to use other antibiotics, we have up to about a 10% failure rate. And for congenital syphilis, that is absolutely unacceptable. So penicillin has to be the drug used in pregnancy. In early stage disease, officially the criteria is one dose, period. But for pregnant women, a lot of us will actually use a second dose a week later. And one of the reasons we do this is we're trying to get levels to the baby, sustained therapeutic levels to the baby. And so a lot of us will actually give a second dose a week later just to make sure that baby gets sustained levels and actually gets adequate treatment also. And then late stage disease, we still do, you know, three doses 1 week apart. I put this in here just to remind everybody that if they are allergic to penicillin, you skin test them, you oral challenge them, you do whatever, and if they truly are, absolutely, they anaphylax with penicillin, you give them penicillin anyways, but you desensitize them in labor and delivery with a crash cart by the bedside and your allergist right there. So this is actually, George Wendell published this in the New England Journal back in 85, and it's still the desensitization protocol a lot of us will use if they have anaphylaxis issues. I wanted to just mention this too. We now have very nice data out of our center. The part on the left is data while a baby is still a fetus. So while the woman is still pregnant, if you do paraumbilical blood sampling, you draw blood from the umbilical cord and test the baby and find out that they have, from primary stage disease, they have, you know, the early liver dysfunction, up to early latents, you start getting IgM production, ascites, sono abnormalities. The big thing is what we published a couple of years ago was after you treat them, these findings improve over time if you follow them on ultrasound. So treatment works. You just got to give it time. I want to mention this also. This is a paper by Jim Alexander out of Parkland also back in 99. And again, still the same. It works beautifully in pregnant women. Penicillin works wonderfully. You see anywhere between 95 and 100% treatment success rates. And those that did fail, oh, and that's across all stages. That's primary, secondary, early, latent, across all stages and across all gestational ages. It works. Those that didn't, this is a paper we published many years ago, those that still ended up with a diagnosis of congenital syphilis after appropriate treatment really had very high levels at treatment and delivery of VDRL, early maternal stage of syphilis, interval from treatment to delivery, and delivery in an infant less than 36 weeks gestation. So that is congenital syphilis very quickly and very broadly. And if we guys have questions, obviously we're going to, I think, start a question and answer session. But I had to put this up here. So William Ulsor, he obviously was Hopkins. And since I'm now up at Hopkins, I had to put this in here. But he who knows syphilis knows medicine. And I think that really is still true. I mean, again, ophthalmology. I know nothing about ophthalmology. And here we are here, you know, listening to ophthalmologic evaluations. So he who knows syphilis truly still knows medicine. Thank you all very much for your attention.
I think we have enough cord here so that we can get our speakers to stand up and answer questions. Those of you who have questions, please come use the mic as I believe the session is being recorded, and then I'll hand over the microphone to whomever's answering. Arlene, identify yourself.
Okay. Hi. I don't know, this is a little bit short, but I'm Arlene Sainé, University of North Carolina. So I have two questions. First one for Yeti. Can you please comment on the performance of the two rapid tests in the field? I think one of the issues is obviously the sensitivity, perhaps in use, like in contact investigations from DIS.
Here you go, Yeti.
Which of the rapid tests are you talking about?
Either one. I mean, I know one of the concerns with that Trinity Health Check, but perhaps maybe Chembio performs better in the field. So I just wanted to know for its potential application in the United States for contact investigation.
Okay, I know that out of the country, the Chembio is a good front runner. And it's actually being used in a lot of countries right now. I believe we have a study going on in Malawi. And somebody's going to talk about that tomorrow. So when you compare, I can't remember off the top of my head, but when you compare the sensitivity and specificity, syphilis health check to their treponemal test, I think it was the TPP, I'm not quite sure, it wasn't too good. But when you compared the syphilis health check to an algorithm of reactive TREP, reactive non-TREP, I think it went up to 100%. So we've seen something like that before. With SD Duo, I believe they've had studies in Nigeria, in China, and somewhere else, Nigeria, China, I think Zambia. I think those three, they had some fairly good results. So, but like I said, we still need to keep doing this evaluations to be a little bit more comfortable. With syphilis health check, I know because it's very new, so some have reported not very satisfactory results from the field, and I think there are some papers around. We are also working on that. We just completed an evaluation, and we're in the process of analyzing that data and releasing the results as well.
And just one other quick question for Dr. Donariti. Are you planning to do any sexual network analysis for your cases? Clearly we've been concerned about HIV-positive MSM, but now we are seeing cases of ocular syphilis among HIV-negative. So I'm curious to see about the potential investigations among your clusters.
Yeah, so I work at the HIV clinic at the county hospital, and we work closely with the public health department, and many of our providers are actually work in the public health department, and there is active investigation going on. And part of it, the issue is the case finding, and that heightened awareness among the DIS and among public health to really try to capture those cases. These were many cases were reported after this initial cluster that may not have without that public notification and warning with the MMR. So there is active surveillance going on for that.
Next question, please.
Josephine Gilbert from Miami-Dade County. This is for congenital syphilis. Because for women identified between 28 to 32 weeks, we've noticed at least, I can say 80% of the women that we treated, they don't make it up to 40 weeks. It's like 2 weeks after the penicillin shots, they deliver. So this gives us congenital syphilis automatically. So have you seen any trend like that?
Absolutely. So one of the concerns and one of the things we deal with from a treatment of a pregnant woman is the Jarrett-Schirksheimer reaction. And what we found in pregnancy is if we have a baby that is infected, so mom may have whatever stage disease she has, but if the baby has evidence of congenital syphilis, say on ultrasound there's abnormalities consistent with congenital syphilis, they are at high, so they have a higher bacterial burden, the baby does. We have found that when we treat them, they are at higher risk of preterm contractions, stillbirth. The increase in preterm labor is actually not been significantly reported, like true, not contractions, but true delivery has actually not been reported from the Jarrett-Schirksheimer reaction in large studies. There's been case reports. There's been, you know, discussions of it. I've certainly treated a number of women that have started contracting within an hour of, you know, of treatment, and we keep them actually on labor and delivery for 24 hours to see what's going to happen. But you're right. If they do happen to go into labor within, you know, 30 days of treatment, you officially have a congenital syphilis baby. We have moms that are infected, say, after 36 weeks gestation, if the baby has evidence of syphilis, we actually oftentimes will deliver them, give those babies to the nursery to then be treated to try to avoid the increased risk of stillbirth and contractions and such in the pregnant women. So I have actually been known to deliver a few babies early, but not significantly preterm. I'm talking 36 weeks onwards.
Dr. Lukart.
Sheila Lukart, University of Washington. I have a question and a comment. First, the question is to Sharisha and to the other syphilis experts here. There aren't any good data on efficacy or recommendations for use of topical steroids when you're treating ocular syphilis that I know of. And I'd just like to get people's views on whether or not topical steroids should be used or would be helpful.
Thanks, Sheila. That's an excellent question, and that is an area of controversy. I think there's a varied clinical practice in terms of using steroids, so if anybody else has any other thoughts in their experience, be welcome.
It's variable.
Yeah, the ophthalmologists seem to like it, but the ID folks don't, I think is probably an accurate way to put it.
There are no data.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. There are, however, pharmacologic studies that show that the concentration of both antibiotics and steroids that get into the inflamed eye are much higher than what you achieve with systemic antibiotics. So there may be a rationale for that, but I'm not aware of any data. That's also analogous, isn't it, to the data that I know that you're quite aware of regarding the whole question of whether or not you should use steroids in people who have otic syphilis as well. The ENT people like to use that, but I'm not aware of any data. If anybody else in the audience does, that'd be great. And now your comment.
Now my comment. Yeah, I think it's really exciting that there's a new IgM test in the works, but I think it's important to make it clear that IgM negativity does not necessarily rule out congenital syphilis. Ken Bromberg and Sarah Rostron did a beautiful set of studies 20, 25 years ago showing that you can have infants in whom you can identify T. pallidum by immunofluorescence, but they're still IgM negative. And it all depends upon when they're delivered with respect to the time of infection in utero. So there's this period where you have lots of treponemes before the antibodies appear, and then IgM comes up, and as that happens, then the treponemes seem to go away in terms of being readily identified in umbilical cord preps and things like that. So it may turn out to be much like the CSF-VDRL. If it's positive, it's real. If it's negative, it doesn't rule it out.
Great. Thank you. This is a remarkable situation. Not only did all of our speakers stay on time, but I don't see more questions. I know that Yeti's got another comment. Come on up, Yeti. We'd welcome anybody else with questions, though. This is your chance.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheila, for that comment. And while I have the floor, can I say that I'm looking for samples for congenital syphilis? So I saw this as an opportunity, because one of the limitations we have to evaluating that test is we can barely get any samples. We don't have any at all. So if you have any samples and you're willing to work with us, then I guess we'll be friends.
I see another question coming. Just for those of you who are thinking about mechanisms for getting specimens to CDC, your DIS are your friends on this effort. Please reach out to your DIS. They can help contact CDC or contact the CDC itself. Another question. Please identify yourself first.
Yes, I'm Ivana Mims. I'm the nurse consultant from the Oklahoma State Department of Health. And I have a question in regards to congenital treatment of the pregnant mother for congenital syphilis. In the presentation, it said that during the early stage of congenital syphilis that the mother should be treated with two doses of penicillin. I recently had an issue come up about this with a DIS and a nurse who were going back and forth because the DIS suggested the two-dose treatment, but because of how the protocol was written, the nurse only wanted to give one dose. So my question is there any other like clinical manifestations that the nurses should look for or consider in giving that two-dose? Or is there something in the CDC guidelines that clearly indicates when to give that two-dose regimen?
So it's a tough one. They actually don't define it. So the CDC guidelines have, you know, the treatment, and then they have that paragraph which says some experts feel that a second dose should be given.
Yes.
There is not a delineation. Like some experts, I know the some experts, and there wasn't a cut point where, yes, some of them get, you know, if you have these manifestations, you get a second dose. If you have these manifestations, you only get one dose. Pretty much the some experts, which I'm not naming names, but the some experts say, felt very strongly, as do actually I, that everybody should be getting that second dose. But that's based on very little data other than some of the early pharmacokinetic stuff. There's not great data out there. So you can argue it either way, to be honest, and that's why the guidelines are written as they are, because the guidelines like evidence, and so they're not willing to move over to, yes, a second dose, absolutely, because there's not cold evidence yet.
Okay. And my second question is in regards to the treatment of ocular syphilis. We had a situation arise where we had a patient present with symptoms of ocular syphilis. My question is, during the presentation, it said that ocular syphilis or neural syphilis should be treated IV or with procaine. If they present in a setting like a health department or clinic setting, should they be administering penicillin G as well as initiating that referral, or should they just immediately refer them on for treatment with IV therapy?
I think it really depends on the patient. Some patients are able to come in and get the procaine daily. In my clinical practice, it really is variable. So for the instance, the patients that had severe ophthalmologic findings, we, as an ID physician, I recommended that they get IV therapy and have a PICC line placed. Not all patients are going to be amenable to that and would rather come in daily for their procaine penicillin. So I think it can depend, and it's based on patient. But either of those options is recommended.
Okay. Well, like our facilities, we just strictly use the penicillin G. So if we had a patient present, should we just refer them out or give them the penicillin G?
Oh, so what? He's clarifying. So would you delay therapy while you're trying to get it?
Right.
I think I would try to give it as immediately as possible and try to get the patient treated and while they're captive with you.
Okay.
So,
all
yes.
Thank you.
One more question, please.
Okay. Elaine Thomas from University of New Mexico. I have several syphilis cases that I get called about, but I'll mention one that I hope will be maybe illustrative for a congenital syphilis question that I got asked yesterday, but I've been asked that question before, so I thought I'd get your opinion. Called about a patient who's 20 weeks pregnant now. In November, she had a 1 to 64 and was allegedly treated, and I don't know any details. Sometime in between had a titer that was said to have had an adequate drop. Don't know the number. Now she's 20 weeks pregnant, and she's got a 1 to 8. And just because, you know, patients with syphilis are the very people who might get reinfected or might not have gotten correctly treated or might not have gotten an adequate titer drop, if this patient wasn't pregnant, I'd say she's fine. She's probably been adequately treated, follow up. And since she's 20 weeks pregnant, what's your threshold for just saying, you know what, let's give her another round of Isil and just to be on the safe side, would you give her one? Would you give her two? Would you give her three? What would you do with this woman?
Remind me when the 1 to 64 was?
November-ish.
So it's been less than a year.
Right.
And we don't know what stage she was when she was treated.
I don't know that.
That's part of the problem is. So obviously early stage disease, you're going to see titer drops faster. Later stage disease, it may take a long time or they may end up staying seropositive. Or what's the right word now? Serofast. Well, somebody yelled at me for saying serofast, so I'm trying to make sure I'm using the right terminology. So serofast is still legal, right? Okay. That's the way I always trained. So what I can tell you what we did at Parkland and to get around these. If it was 1 to 64, somebody has to know that middle number to find out what the adequate drop was. So I'd be investigating that. But if I just had a 1 to 64 and a 1 to 8, I would say that's an appropriate drop in that time frame, and I would not do anything other than an ultrasound to follow, you know, to see, and then notify the pediatricians. However, if we get that middle number, and that middle number was 1 to 1, and suddenly we've now gone to 1 to 8 again, I absolutely would retreat. If it is outside the stage where I can say her treatment was 2-3 years ago and she's serofast at 1 to 8, that's a lot more. That's, and actually I'm curious to see what other people do. We kind of made a decision that said high titer serofast, and again, however you define that, we chose in pregnancy to say anybody that was 1 to 8 or greater that was considered serofast, we actually did retreat based on very little data, but we just said pregnancy is such a high risk. Some people have used that in a 1 to 16, a 1 to 32. Some people don't do it at all. We chose, because we were paranoid about congenital syphilis, to do that, but I wouldn't do it in this scenario. If it was, say, a late stage disease that was treated 1 to 64, though, I doubt. Again, there's a lot of nebulousness, you know, but I doubt. And she dropped to 1 to 8, that's appropriate. So I don't think I would automatically.
Would you treat him?
I wouldn't treat that patient either. I think your question really betrays one of the nuances in syphilis management, which is it depends on the patient. If this is somebody who has been good about prenatal care, who you can establish a relationship with, who you think will come back, then you have a certain amount of latitude to collect additional information, pursue that information, and so forth. On the other hand, if this is somebody who was perhaps a crack or an IV drug user who happened to come into the ED and had a positive blood test, when you've got them, you treat them. And so there's a certain amount of clinical and epidemiologic judgment that has to do with what we do and who the patients are. I don't know if there are other opinions or thoughts about that here. Obviously, the other sort of mantra that we use a lot in our clinical management of all patients with STIs, but syphilis is certainly one of those examples, is when in doubt, treat. On the other hand, the judgment issue is, I know there are a number of people in this audience who have those patients who've been serofast at a titer of 1 to 4, 1 to 8, even 1 to 16, who have sort of, you know, reached the human buttocks limit as to how much benzathine penicillin can be sustained over a lifetime, because they keep getting treated and treated and retreated. And so, again, this is a tough situation, and unfortunately, while our judgment isn't perfect, that's what we have to use.
Thank you.
Other questions, thoughts, comments? Well, I so appreciate the three speakers for their presentations and all of your questions. Thank you all.